Today, here in Boston, Interior Secretary Ken Salazar announced that approval has been granted for construction of a controversial wind farm off Cape Cod, what will be the country's first offshore wind farm. It strikes us that a year ago tomorrow, the Interior Department would be embroiled in a disaster that resulted from yesterday's technology. You all know 11 workers were killed when a transocean drilling rig off Louisiana exploded into flames. The BP deepwater well below, gushing oil into the Gulf of Mexico, wouldn't be capped for 87 days. In a moment, we'll speak with Jeffrey Ball, environmental editor of the Wall Street Journal, who'll give us an update on conditions in the Gulf. But first, a man who makes his living there, oysterman John Tesvich. Now, traditionally, Louisiana produces more oysters than any other state. They act as little filters, these oysters. They breathe in water, helping the ecosystem and the economy. But oysters are also like the canary in the coal mine, and most of Louisiana's crop was wiped out after the BP blowout. John Tesvich had been farming oysters in Port Sulphur, Louisiana, for 30 years. His father started the family business 80 years ago. He joins us now. And, John, last time we spoke, it was 9 days into the blowout. You were getting ready to be part of a flotilla, hoping to head off the oil slick that was approaching your oyster beds in the shallow wetlands there. You weren't successful, but we know that the oysters weren't just killed by oil. They were killed by chemical dispersants and by diversions of fresh water from the Mississippi River that were pumped into the estuary to try to keep the oil out?
Yes, exactly. Normally, these diversions that are used to control salinity, they're operated at a certain level to maintain salinity. In this case, they opened them wide open. The reasoning was better to flood with fresh water, and even if it risked killing off a crop, rather than have the oil come into these sensitive wetland areas.
Yeah, and part of the reason that oysters are so dependent, we said this before, you know, oysters grow by locking on to reefs and other things, and they sit there and open their shells, open and close
right.
their shells and take in water. They can't swim away.
Right. In most of these areas, we have private leases, and oystermen have developed these beds over sometimes generations. And this is unfortunate, but it can be rebuilt.
Well, but how's that going? First of all, tell us, how bad were you hit? How much of your oyster crop did you lose? And what's your sense that, you know, another concern of yours was that these oysters might spawn again, you know, that, you know, they might spread their eggs
right.
and sperm and spawn
sure.
and create new oysters. So how hard were you hit, and what are the prospects of regrowing this crop?
Direct loss of marketable oysters, you know, we lost probably about 30% of our own private crop.
Mm-hmm.
Some people lost significantly more. But what hurt us more so was that the water being diluted and being over-freshened, we didn't get a normal spawning. So we didn't get the juvenile, the little baby oysters, if you want to call them that. We call them spat. We're hoping that conditions will be favorable, and, you know, so far so good. And the state is trying to work with BP to get monies to help remediate some of this damage and get our beds up. They're still negotiating. Unfortunately, they did not get the money that they were being promised.
Well, we understand that the state asked BP for $15 million up front to remediate the oyster reefs. And by this, you know, you've told us that means putting, you know, crushed limestone on oyster reefs to give something for these little oysters, these spat, I'm sorry, I love that word, to, you know, attach themselves to and grow. BP said yes, then they said no. So this hasn't started yet, this remediation.
Right. That was a verbal agreement that the state had. They had announced it months ago, and now, you know, in the last couple of weeks, they seem to come to some impasse. You know, $15 million will be a small part of what they're going to have to pay in natural resource damage. It may drag on 10, even 20 years. We can't wait that long to begin the remediation.
Well, and then there's your own personal compensation. You say you received some emergency money. Many people did early on. But it was half what you requested, and now you're in this process to get final compensation. We've spoken to others about this. You know, many people are arguing that they're not willing to accept the final compensation, which, by the way, when they accept it, then they can't sue, because it doesn't match what they think their business is worth. Is that the boat you're in?
Yes. We've gone through the claim process, both with BP and Mr. Feinberg's firm.
Ken Feinberg,
and,
yep. Uh-huh.
Yes, with the Gulf Coast Claims Fund.
Mm-hmm.
We were really happy to get some help because it was very tough last year. We were hoping that the process of this final claim process would be more forward and it seems like it's just dragging. It's taking a long time.
Well, you've had to hire attorneys to argue this for you. You've still been able to sell oysters because you get them out of Texas, but that Texas supply is going to, you know, their season's going to end soon. What has happened to your company? Have you had to lay people off? How does it work?
Well, we had laid 50 people off last June, and we were shut down for 5 months. We did not do any processing until we got oysters became available from Texas. Right now, we've hired most of our people back.
Yeah, but, you know, in the meantime, you've become sort of a catalog company. You know, you're selling oysters from other parts of the country. You're not doing what it is that you do, which is farm and fish for them. So you're not one of those that worries that it'll never come back?
That's hard to tell. My nature is to be optimistic. When I go out there, it seems like, you know, things are coming back to normal. We can't see things on a microscopic level. Nobody can tell us, will it come back? We may have supply issues this year and the next year. Those are things that we weren't worried about before April 20th of last year.
Yeah, well, what is that like? What the other people are out of, you know, we've spoken to a shrimper, we've spoken to other fishermen. What's it like when you pass friends on the street, you know, when you gather at, you know, you're all picking up your milk at the same time or having a drink after work? I mean, what's it like?
Well, unfortunately, you know, most of the conversation is about the BP claims process. It causes a lot of anxiety in the seafood community. To me, it's been too much. I've already done too much worrying about it, and I see people that are still stressing over it. And I said, look, I gave it to the attorneys. That's what they do. I've got to focus on my business and trying to rebuild it.
Well, we're hearing from experts on the subject that a huge part of the problem in the Gulf is that a lot of the oil is hidden, and a lot of the problems are in the future, and they lay there almost like time bombs, you know, and we don't know what they're going to be. Have you been out? I mean, what's it like? What's it like out there?
Well, you know, last year it was terrible. You could see oil. You go out there, you can smell the dispersant. But now it seems like we see fish. The waters are open now. The seafood has been tested, and they say it's clean, and our beds are reopened. Unfortunately, you know, even though our beds are open, we don't have as much oysters on there. We do have some, and, you know, we are going to depend on the Louisiana supply in the coming months.
Well, meanwhile, what about public relations? What about people who might be thinking, I don't want to eat anything from Gulf waters? You know, I mean, we're hearing Washington is overtaking Louisiana as a producer of oysters. Do you worry about that?
Well, the public perception, it is serious. The Seafood Market Promotion Board and the Department of Wildlife Fisheries and the EPA, they're all working on that. They're doing the tests, and, you know, it's the most tested product, I think, anywhere in the world right now. So what we've seen, though, is that some of our customers, and we deal mostly with restaurateurs, and some of these people have taken it off the menu. And when you get off the menu, there's, you know, you have to convince that restaurateur to put it back on his menu. You know, it's worthy of putting it back and that you will have a supply on a constant basis.
That means the consumers who want to support Louisiana oystermen have to go out and demand oysters back on the menu.
Exactly. Ask for Louisiana oysters and, you know, get us back on those restaurant menus.
John Tesvich, an oysterman from Port Sulphur, Louisiana. John, thanks so much and best to you.
Well, thank you, Robin.
Okay, but should people demand that Louisiana oysters be put back on the menu? There's an op-ed piece in the New York Times today saying just that. It says, you know, if you're still celebrating Passover, put an oyster at your Seder table. But how healthy is the water in the Gulf? Jeffrey Ball is environmental editor for the Wall Street Journal. And Jeff, just answer that question first. I mean, John just mentioned that his oyster beds are open, but these are, you know, private beds that he leases from the state. The public beds, we understand, are still closed. So first and foremost, are the Louisiana oysters healthy to eat?
Well, the authority that we have to go on here is the government, both the federal government and state governments. And they say that indeed oysters and other seafood reaching the market are safe to eat.
What about fish? Let's move on to that, because you report on problems with red snapper showing up with signs of disease. Now, presumably, if the fish have signs of disease, like these, you know, corroded fins, I guess you're writing about, they won't go to market. But what does that mean, that they have those signs of disease?
Yeah, you know, it's a good point. And I think it's important to make a distinction between concerns that people have about seafood for human consumption and concerns that people have about the safety of the fisheries for environmental reasons. As I said, the government tests say that seafood is safe to eat. Now, there are, it's important to note, questions about those tests. One question is whether the federal government is assuming realistic quantities of seafood that are consumed. Some people think that the federal government is assuming that people eat much less seafood than indeed they eat, and that so there are some concerns being voiced that if people eat more, they may have problems. The government says that that's not the case. But to your question about snapper, there are a number of instances popping up across the Gulf where scientists are seeing things that concern them, not for reasons of human consumption, but for reasons of the environment. And you mentioned snapper, so we can talk about that. Mm. Snapper is a sort of iconic fish in the Gulf, important fishery, and is turning up, according to scientists, with lesions on the skin and with rotting on the fins. Now, it's not happening everywhere that snapper is being caught, but it's happening in enough spots across the Gulf Coast that people are concerned. And like much of the detective work going on to suss out the potential effects environmentally of the spill, it's not clear that what is being seen with snapper is in fact a result of the BP oil spill. But what's concerning scientists is that they say that they've not seen this kind of effect before. And when they sort of do their hunting, they are concerned that oil might be at play.
Well, the same thing is true of these baby dolphins that are washing up on shore in higher than normal numbers. Some of the dolphins, dead dolphins, washing up, terrible images, have oil on them. But again, you know, it's science, so they have to make the direct link of the deaths to the oil.
That's right. So there are, since the end of last April, essentially when the spill happened, something like 300 dolphins have washed up, most of them dead. The federal government is concerned enough about that that it's called it an unusual mortality event in bureaucratic speak. And a small number of these dolphins, about nine, have been found to have had BP oil on them. Again, though, the question is, was that coincidental or did the presence of the BP oil on them kill them?
Yeah.
And again, this is the sort of work that's going on. And it's important to note that this is not just kind of esoteric academic work that's happening. There are huge economic implications of this because very broadly, there's a massive scientific investigation that's going on that is as a result of federal law. And the government is essentially putting together what could be a legal case against BP. And all of these things, the dolphins, the oysters, the snapper, various other examples could end up in essentially a case that the government brings against BP and tries to get settlement money for.
In fact, you call this the biggest environmental investigation ever. We're coming up on a break here, but just paint this picture. You say, you know, who's doing the investigating? You say there are government people out with BP reps, everybody eyeing everybody else?
That's right. It's a massive, massive investigation. This is taking place in what a lot of scientists say is a part of the world that's one of the least environmentally studied parts of the world. So there's a huge learning curve here. But scientists are descending essentially from all over the world here to figure out what's going on.
That's Jeff Ball, environmental editor of The Wall Street Journal. And Jeff, as we were saying, you know, oystermen and op-ed columnists in The Times are saying, please, if you want to support Louisiana, order a Louisiana oyster. And scientists are saying, well, you know, they're healthy. The question is, you know, how much of the product is there going to be? They're praying that a new crop will grow. We've heard that the oyster harvest is down below 50% of its normal levels. But just let's trip through some other things as well. What about other shellfish? The Gulf, traditionally, the U.S. is the largest producer of shrimp, crab, crawfish. What's their standing?
No, it's a good question. Again, in terms of all seafood, that is shellfish and regular fish, according to the government, which continues to test this fish, it's safe to eat, again, with the caveats that the government has about consumption levels.
Well, because we should just underscore that they have found some tiny amounts of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which, you know, you can get in exhaust from cars, et cetera. They find tiny amounts. So, you know, critics are saying, well, wait a minute, if you're saying there's just some amounts in these shrimp, crab, crawfish, you shouldn't eat a whole lot of those things.
That's right. So these things, which are known by the acronym PAHs, are commonly found in lots of things like exhaust, as you say. And the government has set limits, essentially acceptable limits for the presence of PAHs in various kinds of seafood. And it has found what it what it says are limits vastly below those acceptable limits. That is to say, nowhere near what it would regard as the danger zone. But nevertheless, it is in certain seafood finding trace amounts of that. Now, in some seafood, it says that it's finding not even discernible levels of that. But you know, beyond what it's finding in terms of human consumption, there are concerns about things that are popping up on other sorts of seafood. So let's take crabs for a moment. There are researchers who are finding in very, very tiny crabs little orange droplets, and they are not certain yet what those orange droplets are, but they believe that they potentially are linked to the spill. Again, these are not the crabs that you would find at your market. They're very, very small. But the concern is ultimately people don't entirely know. Scientists don't entirely understand the pathway. So what does the presence of an orange droplet mean ultimately for the health of the crab population and for the safety of the seafood ultimately? And again, you know, there are massive numbers of things about this oil spill that are unprecedented, and the trajectory of this sort of thing is one of them. Let me just say one other quick thing, and John Tesfitch alluded to it before in your interview. There's a concern on the part of the seafood industry in Louisiana and across the Gulf, which is hugely economically important, that regardless of what the actual numbers are, regardless of whether there is or is not contamination, the public is not going to want Gulf seafood. And it's very, very concerning for the industry, and that's a very difficult mindset to change. And so at the end of the day, economically, it may not matter so much what is or isn't in the seafood if, in fact, people aren't buying the stuff.
Well, and again, scientists are saying right now what gets to market you can eat. And what about beaches? We watched the images. We know they were clean public beaches that people go to, maybe cleaned of tar balls more than out-of-the-way beaches where wildlife goes. So what are the thoughts about beaches?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and I think there's a basic thing to understand, and the beaches are a good illustration of this. There's a general sense that the acute effects of this oil spill were much less than many people feared. That is, the amount of oil, given the amount of oil that spilled out of this well, the amount of oil that actually got to shore was much less than people thought for a whole host of reasons. And now what's emerging is concern about subtle effects. That is, what might be lurking there that might have some long-term effect that wasn't initially visible. As I say, the beaches are a good example of that. The sorts of beaches that tourists tend to go to have been deep cleaned. So if anyone's been along the Gulf, along tourist beaches in the past several months, you've seen huge machines that essentially are sifting this sand and actually scrubbing it and washing it. The authorities say that they've cleaned tourist beaches to depths of about 3 feet. That is to say, if little Johnny is digging with his sand pail on a tourist beach, he's not going to find oil down to depths at least of 3 feet. There is an ecological concern, however, which is there are lots of beaches along the Gulf Coast which are not tourist beaches, but which are valuable for various forms of wildlife.
Sure, and a sea turtle digs and lays their eggs in the sand, and those eggs can get killed.
Yeah. That's right. And in the case of many of those beaches, they've decided not to clean down to such depths because in many cases, cleaning can actually do more environmental harm than good. So in several of these beaches, they say that there still is oil at depths of more than a few inches. And then in addition to that, they say that there are essentially mats of dried, somewhat dried oil underneath the surf along the lengths of certain beaches that can present environmental risks. And again, the extent of those, they don't entirely understand because like so much of this spill, it's just not been studied before.
Well, Jeff, well, these are the tar mats where tar's gotten mixed up with sand. You got this big tarry mat. There's also dead zones that researchers are reporting near the site of the blowout. So I guess the question is, just a little time we have, you mentioned this. It's the biggest environmental investigation ever. Government officials with BP reps dogging each other, watching each other, collecting water, fish, keeping the results secret. Perhaps it's going to go to court. But we learned from studies of other spills that you may not know for 40 years. Here when there was a 1969 spill in Buzzards Bay, Massachusetts, the fiddler crabs were impacted 40 years later. So, you know, it may not be a long time before we know.
That's exactly true in two senses. It may not be for many years that this investigation is complete. And so to whatever extent there is going to be money paid and environmental rectification done. That may not happen for a while. And secondly, to I think what is probably your broader point, to the extent that there are environmental implications from this spill, those may not become clear for a while. You mentioned the Buzzards Bay spill, a 1969 spill, which according to a peer-reviewed paper is still having very subtle effects on crabs. So again, this stuff, scientists tell us, can stay in the environment potentially for a long time.
On the other hand, industry backers might say, look, it's not as bad as it should have been. So
precisely.
We have to wait and see. Jeffrey Ball, environmental editor of the Wall Street Journal, on the health of the Gulf, which again, we may not know for a long time. Jeff, thanks as always.
Nice to be with you.